You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Josh Norton. This week on...
Jossie, what are you doing?
I want to do a podcast on Frozen 2.
I've already done one. Why don't you go outside? Don't you want to build a snowman?
I'm not going out in the unknown or getting lost in the woods.
It's just the backyard. I mean, listen, I already did all the editing and...
It's okay, Dad. Let it go.
Some things never change.
Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish.
The soundtrack's actually really helped.
Well, and if it's a musical, most of the plot is happening through the songs.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Welcome to Screenfish Radio. We are thrilled this week to talk about Frozen 2, the sequel to Disney's mega ultra super hit from 2013. And this week we have a couple of just incredible women on the podcast. Welcome back, Amanda and Mira. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hello.
Frozen 2 returns us to the story of Elsa the Snow Queen and her sister Anna as they embark on an adventure far away from the Kingdom of Arendelle. As Elsa finds herself questioning her very need and position in the world, and Anna and the rest of the team attempts to support her on that journey. Mm-hmm. As always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers. But ladies, what did you think of Frozen 2?
I really liked it, actually. So I liked the first one. I was late to the game on seeing the first one. So I'm kind of excited that I was early to the game on seeing Frozen 2. I thought it was great. I love that Disney does great themes and good subtext and that it's just as engaging for adults as it is for kids.
I didn't love this one.
Okay.
I was also late to the game on the first Frozen. I remember friends whose children are just a little bit older than mine were like, you have to see this, man. And I was like, what is the hype around this film and this song that has kids losing their mind?
Yeah.
So we borrowed it from a neighbor. I showed it to my son. And then that was it. We were down the Frozen rabbit hole, and he loved it. And I, having zero expectations, loved it. I was like, this is hilarious. It's so charming. It's cute. And oh my gosh, from a gender equality perspective, I was just like, rah!
Yeah.
So then, of course, my expectations were much higher for Frozen 2. So.
Yeah, I fall somewhere in the middle. I really liked it. I love the music. Of course, as I was saying, I've been listening to it all week. I didn't find it as, I don't want to use the term simple as the last one, because but maybe as straightforward as the last one. I think that was the thing that keeps pulling me back, but I'd like to see it again in that sense to sort of feel it out. I liked the complexity of it. I liked the fact that they're treating their audience that saw it at the age of 10 6 years later, and they're acknowledging that passage of time. They're not ignoring it. You know, it's sort of like I felt with this one, they were trying to mature the characters as well because their audience is mature. You know, Olaf seems perpetually young, but in this time, like all of a sudden, he would download Kierkegaard or something into his into his banter.
Yeah.
You know, he'd be talking about the snow, and then all of a sudden, he'd say, "Change is the." What did he say?
Oh, that was...
Change is the mistress that taunts us all, or something like that.
And it was so early on,
But then he goes, what am I saying? And it's like, what did you say?
The mistress that taunts us with her beauty, something. Like, it was, I remember hearing that and being like, oh, this is unexpected.
But so, to me, that's what I liked about it. But it's not as... not as catchy, you know, like...
But I think that's kind of the point. So, to me, the thing that made Frozen 1 so... so different and so engaging and really caught people's attention is that it was finally a departure from Disney's typical formula, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was about the relationship of the sisters. It wasn't you meet somebody on Sunday and you marry them on Monday and mm-hmm. you don't know anything about them. And like all of those fairy tale stereotypes were challenged in the first film, mm-hmm. and it really set a different base. And I think that's actually what they extended and continued in the second one, because they made it closer to real life. I mean, there's still the magic and all those pieces for sure, but there was like the conflict between Kristoff going, okay, here I am with this super successful woman that has a full agenda on her own. How do I fit into that? What does that mean for me, right? Mm. What's our relationship look like, and how can we also be equals and partners through this? There was the absolute piece around the indigenous peoples mm-hmm. And the land rights and the expectations, the interactions, the relationships, very real and prevalent to the time that we live in today. Mm-hmm. There, like all of that, I think, to me, was them doing exactly what worked the first time and then bringing it even closer to reality. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why. Well, they were certainly taking the themes that they did in the first time and adding complexity. I mm-hmm. think that's the issue that that's what stuck out to me most. And I say the first one is simple. I don't mean it was simple. Like, you're right. It challenged. It broke stereotypes. It did all these things. But when you look at the narrative of the story, mm-hmm. you could explain it much more easily, I felt, than you can when you come out of this one.
Yeah.
And somebody told me there's entirely far too much going on. And I don't, like, to me, I didn't feel that. Mm. But there is far more going on because Kristoff isn't just the arm. Depending on how you view Kristoff. Like, Kristoff in the first one is just sort of along for the ride. Mm. And it's, like you said, it's very focused on the relationship of the sisters. And this one, I mean, this might get right into some of the things, but I mean, like, in this one, I felt like they split everybody up, so everybody had their own
journey
mm-hmm. which felt like so much more was going on. Because
right.
Olaf in the first one is, again, along for the ride. Mm-hmm. He tells some funny jokes, and his carrot nose comes out his butt and all these things, and it's funny, and it's funny. This time, Olaf is almost on this journey of trying to figure out all this mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when somebody says to me there's too much going on, that's what I hear.
Yeah.
But that didn't bother me.
Right.
There wasn't anything that really bothered me, but I was okay with that.
Doesn't Olaf kind of strike you as a cross between, I'm going to totally cross universes here, but like he's like half a Yoda, half a Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah. Kind of.
Right? Like, sage, provides wisdom, sort of is the narrator to the underlying themes, and then just, you know, throws in something really wacky that you're like, what?
And maybe just a dash of vaudevillian character.
Yeah, absolutely.
But see, more in this one, I would say. In the first one, I would say, you know, there was no Yoda.
It was all Jar Jar.
It was all that.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's more of that. Like, it was almost like Olaf didn't know. It was like there was this radio frequency that would turn on.
Right, yeah.
And he taught it. Yep. Even his song, When I'm Older, or...
maybe I'll understand.
Understand this when I'm older.
Yeah.
I actually like that because to me that was a throw to the new kids that were going to see it.
Mm.
I wondered that because, again, I wondered if Olaf was trying to walk that line between, like, my traditional audience is now 15, 16 years old, or my original audience, but now they're also 9 and 10-year-olds coming and seeing this one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But don't worry, kids. The complexity will make sense. That's what I wondered, but I don't know whether I'm thinking too much.
It could also be that the 8, 9, 10-year-olds are having these thoughts, but don't yet have the language to articulate that they're having those thoughts. Like, wondering about things happen when you're older, and I don't quite understand it yet. And but I'm aware of the fact that I'm excluded from this arena of olderness. So he's a voice for kids.
I think you're
and
right.
A normalizing agent too, right? It's okay to not know.
Yeah,
and to know that some stuff I won't know for a little bit.
Yeah.
One of the things I would say too is the songs I felt were more complex. Let It Go. I would say if you pinned it on an arc of Disney ballad, it would fit pretty standardly. It's a wonderful song. Mm-hmm. I love Adele Nazeem's voice. Adina Menzel.
Well done.
Really want him to present at the Oscars again. It's beautiful. It's an incredible song. But the one they're pushing forward now in this one, it seems the one that's getting the big push isn't Show Yourself, which I thought might be. I think it's going to be the Into the Unknown, which it's far more complex in terms of its music.
It still did exactly what Let It Go did, because that night I got home from the theater. I went to see it with my son, and I found myself into the unknown. While I'm washing the dishes, and I'm like, oh, it's in me. Yeah. And then I asked my son tonight before coming here, what was your favorite song? And he said, Into the Unknown.
Yeah, it's earwormy. Wow. Yeah. Of all, like, I thought I liked Show Yourself better, but it is so much more earwormy than the other tracks. Mm. But again, like Let It Go, it's the chorus. It's just that Into the Unknown. Wow, yeah. That was awful. Well, that's not earwormy. That's just wormy.
It's placed similarly to the first Frozen. It's placed early on in the film too, where there's that inner conflict within Elsa. Mm-hmm. So she's sort of, I'm not sure what to do. I want to go. I want to stay. And it launches her into her journey.
Yeah.
Whereas Show Yourself is when she's arriving. Mm.
That's true. But it's more of a climactic tune.
Yeah. Maybe there's something to that struggle, that grit that we subconsciously, it catches us. Yeah.
And you know what? Now that you said that, I would even argue that they're sister songs.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I did notice, I mean, I probably noticed it when I saw it, but because I've been soundtracking, the same voice plays a role in both songs. That is in both tracks. Oh,
yeah, that's
tracks.
The element, the magic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The spirit of the forest.
It plays different roles, but it's the only two songs that it is a featured voice. And the second one is more embedded into the music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the first film, it's more call and response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is the point of the song.
I was going to say, and totally fits that story arc, right? If this is the beginning of the conflict, so they feel like two separate entities, and then this is when she's come through it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're integrated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, this is the stuff I liked. I wouldn't say there's anything I didn't like, but I'm saying this would be my struggle with it is I see that it is so much more complex, right? Yeah. And I wasn't expecting that.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot to unpack, which doesn't always feel like it should be true on the surface of like a Disney film, right? Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I give it credit for that. Yeah. Like this, I actually thought it was a very good film. I really enjoyed the film. But I would say that, you know, I couldn't come out of it in the same way saying, nailed it, because I'm working through, I'm like, well, those are interesting arguments.
I'm having a lot of feelings.
So how do you think your opinion might change after seeing it again, if you see it a second time?
That's a good question. I hadn't thought of that. I think for me, it would just be more being able to sit, knowing where the story is going and work through what they're working through beforehand. So ironically, the knowing might help. The not knowing where Elsa doesn't know where it's going, having seen the end, going back, it might actually help me work through my thoughts on it a little better, because I know where they're ending up and I see the journey, the character arc.
And I'm just wondering if as you make more sense of the complexity in the experience of the film itself and not in like reflection after, if you might walk out the second time and go like, oh no, they did nail it.
Mm. Could be.
Or, oh no, they missed it. I don't know. Mm. But either way, kind of solidify a feeling more in one direction or the other.
Mm.
Yeah, it could be.
It's a good meta question for reviewing films in general. You know, like the first time you see it, there's a lot going on in terms of, are you tired? Are you hungover? Mm. You know, were people rattling their snacks?
Right.
And
you
had certain expectations and you were surprised by those expectations. So, yeah, it's almost like a critic should probably see it twice to let that first round marinate, settle, and then see it the second time purely for the story, the craft of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think that's fair. And
so basically, we have to stop talking now. We have to watch it.
Imagine
part two coming in 2 weeks.
That'd be hilarious. We just paused it, we go to the film, come back. And we're back. And,
it's now 2 a.m.
That's right, that's right.
Nobody's going to work tomorrow.
Into the unknown. Sorry, I shouldn't have faked you on there.
It's all good. I think in terms of music, though, it's interesting. So was Let It Go the catchy kind of favorite from the first one for you and your son? The first time too?
Yes, but I actually loved a lot of the songs. But again, it's because I had time to listen to them a lot, whereas Frozen 2, I've only, you know, heard the one time so far. But I just loved the music in the first one. Yeah. I think the second one's great too. The music is beautiful.
Yeah.
But it's, again, everything is richer, denser, and it has more to unpack. And that's not a bad thing.
No.
It just meant I felt a bit, as an audience member, there was a point around three quarters of the way through the movie where I went, oh, I'm getting a bit tired from all the plot and information that's going on right now.
Yeah. See, again, there were so many backstories and emotional journeys for each character, whereas the first one, it was Elsa and Anna focused.
And
I mean,
everybody else was periphery.
Yeah, like her ex-boyfriend, whatever his name is.
Hans.
Yeah. Hans is their periphery.
He likes sandwiches.
He likes that's what I was going to say. Yeah. see, and that was the other thing. The music there, too. It wasn't that the first one. And it's unfortunate we have to hold them up against each other. But the first one, there was more bounce in the music. It was a lighter film.
It totally was.
It was. It was maybe you know, adolescent into teenager.
Yeah.
In terms of that, things darken, you know, as you mature and struggle more. Mm-hmm. And Elsa was struggling more. The film was more mature.
Because you see more gray, right? As you mature, you see more gray.
Exactly.
So when you're young, or a novice at something even, right? Like whenever we're starting something new, we really can only see the world in black and white because we need those boundaries to kind of get our feet under ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you grow up, you get into more of the gray. Mm-hmm. And I think that's totally true here too, right? Is it was a lot more black and white in the first one and there's more gray here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as a spectator of film, it's both frustrating to watch a black and white plot. Mm. But sometimes when you just want to zone out and enjoy something without much hardship to it, you're like, that was great, you know? And Anna's bouncing around and Olaf's bouncing around. And I'm, as I said, pleasantly surprised at how, you know, they throw you these curves and these red herrings and you think that she's going to get married to Hans and it's going to be that traditional Disney story. And then, whoops, we turn left.
Yeah.
And now it's Kristoff, but actually it's not. It's Elsa. It's her sister and it's familial love. And I'm sitting there going, yes, thank you. This is so catching me by surprise and I love it. So now we take a different turn in Frozen 2. It's grittier, it's grayer. And so I almost have to switch gears in my adult self that, okay, this is a different thing that's going to come at me. This is, and so I should buckle up for a different journey.
Yeah, it's true. At its core, though, both films are basically about the same thing, which is this reconciling of relationships, right? So what's the nature of relationships, whether it's familial or romantic or... And then this one builds on that because there's still the romantic piece. There's the familial piece with the sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's kind of the ancestral, tribal, heritage piece as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it all, like both films really boil down to relationship, but we're just adding complexity and gray and grit to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here's a comparison that you will not hear on any other podcast, so continue to listen to screenfish.net. It's like the Austin Powers films.
Interesting.
Okay. No.
Let's hear this.
Okay. Hear me out on this one. And it's done far better than the Austin Powers films, and I would also throw in the Shrek films as well, because Shrek and the first Austin Powers film are true satires and parodies.
Right.
They take the genre in which they are built upon and flip the switch.
Right.
So Austin Powers, the first film, which didn't make that much money, is a true satire of all James Bond films. I'm not talking about it being brilliant or anything, but that's what the point of it was. Yeah. It was a satire. Shrek is taking the fairy tale narrative 15 years before we got, you know, Elsa and Anna, and flipping the tropes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the princess turns from beautiful into the ogre, and then we learn the ogre is beautiful, and all those things, but the tropes are still there.
Yeah.
In Shrek 2 and in the second Austin Powers film, both films focus on the characters, which in those films doesn't work, because that's not the point. They were set up to mock a certain genre. Mm-hmm. And now what they've done is they thought, oh, well, everybody loves these characters. We're going to tell the stories about these characters.
Right.
So I would say now Frozen does it far better. But the first film, hearing you ladies talk about it, it takes the Disney princess genre and it stays within it, but it also flips the switch on a number of tropes. True mm-hmm. love's kiss mm-hmm. or an act of true love becomes an act of sacrifice from one sister to mm-hmm. another. They actually mock Anna for trying to right. marry someone in one day. Kristoff yeah. makes that a big joke,
yeah.
you know, and it's done well. But it's much more of a parody in some ways, mm-hmm. in some ways, and still fitting into the Disney brand.
Yeah.
This film focuses more on the characters and on growing them yeah. up. There's less yeah. of the trope flipping, if you will,
yep.
because it's serving a different purpose now. Now, I think, this would be my argument, these characters have taken on such a life of their own, they actually represent things to people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's less about that. So I think the story had to go this direction in that way because in doing that, these characters represent more to the audience.
Yeah. Mm.
And that would be what I would suggest.
I totally see the analogy. I hear you. I think the reason it worked here versus Shrek and Austin Powers is because what they injected was not just inverting the trope. They did that with an injection of reality.
Yeah.
So like in the first Frozen, my favorite song, because I like to be a little bit different, is the one that the rock people, ogre things sing.
Mm. The Fixer right. Upper song?
That is my favorite
song. Is your favorite
song? It is, yeah.
It's a good song.
He's a bit of a Fixer Upper, but I think, again, that how they're challenging the Disney princess tropes is there is no perfect person. That perfection right. doesn't exist, right? That's an injection of reality. Watch your expectations, mm. and everybody's, you know, multifaceted. And so that's a truth injection, which allowed, I think, for the second film when it was about character development to hold a little bit firmer because the injections weren't, let's just flip this on its head and see how it goes.
Mm.
It was, let's do that by injecting some reality and doing some level setting and base setting.
Okay, mm. interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
And I think it's kind of cool because there's, so this is taking a weird turn, but go with me on it a little bit. Like where we exist and live today in society, we have a very different reality and perception of marriage, for example, right? So we live in a world where the average age of first time brides is much higher than it ever has been. And every year it goes up by a couple of years. We're running into a global kind of fertility crisis because people are putting things off so long that often when they're ready to have children, they've maybe moved beyond the prime biological time for that and all of those pieces. But a lot of what's been driving that like the sociology behind why as a world or Western world anyways, are we getting away from marriage or are we not buying into this or are we really driving kind of individual? And a lot of it was because we had these fantasies that were built from our childhood films about what the perfect partner is supposed to be like and what a perfect relationship is supposed to be like and how love at first sight is a thing. And that's actually been ingrained in a lot of us and changed the kind of given us this opportunity for a rude awakening that's now changed the way that society functions. So it's interesting that this can be a response to that and says, let's not continue to create that dissonance for future generations and let's start to kind of infuse a little bit of reality into this.
Mm.
Still have a lot of fun with it and it's fantastical, and but it's not completely out of the realm of how we set up ourselves for thinking about what relationships should be like.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. You should go into consulting.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, good.
Speaking as a woman who grew up a young girl just eating up all that messaging yeah. and wanting to finding a Prince Charming, marrying a Prince Charming, and divorcing
right.
a Prince Charming, I could not agree with you more. Yeah. And Kristoff and Anna mm-hmm. have an interesting, I think there was so much going on that there just wasn't enough to give Kristoff to do. So at mm-hmm. times I thought like, gosh, they really can't figure out what to do with Kristoff.
Right.
So he's playing this rather comical, repetitive plot line of like, I'll just keep trying to propose to her. But then there were a couple moments mm-hmm. like towards the end when she's racing towards the bridge and he scoops her up on Sven and his only line is, what do you need?
Yeah.
And I was that. Just, oh my God, what I a great that. One-liner yeah. to give her. Like, yeah. I swoop in, but just to give you support. And then at the end, when they finally do get to the proposal, or maybe just before, he says to her, it's okay, my love has, my love, not my love is not temporary, my love is...
It was almost like my love is not threatened or something like that.
Yeah, that was the essence of it. That yeah. was just like, it's, I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going anywhere. Yeah. My love has many dimensions to yeah. it, which was also really lovely to
yeah.
see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agreed.
Can we talk a little bit about the villain of the film? Mm-hmm. Because there's mm-hmm. no Prince Hans, nope. although he still exists. He is somewhere shoveling horse manure, according to one of the shorts. I was wondering what you thought the real villain is in Frozen 2, because there's clearly conflict. We've talked about mm-hmm. the gray. We've talked about this. So what or who is the villain of the piece?
That's a good question.
Well, I asked my son. Mm. And he took about 5 seconds, and then he went, the grandfather was the villain.
Oh.
So that's what a 7-year-old saw. Mm.
Okay.
But he did take a few seconds to think about it, you know?
That's interesting. I almost forgot about the grandfather, to be honest. He's in it so briefly. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and when I sort of probed him to explain further, he said because he was mean to those people.
Mm. Mm. That's good.
So... you know, to reduce it to a black and white sort of like what we recognize as a villain is this menacing, threatening presence that wants to or does harm to people.
Yeah.
And so that's what he saw. And I would not disagree with him that, but I would pull it out in this adult context we're having right now and say that then the villain is the ignorance of the past, you know, the ignorance that the grandfather had, that he thought instead of risking exposure to magic, he would wipe out a people.
Mm. Yeah.
And we have seen that played out in history. That fear ignorance, of the fear. Other.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's not your traditional villain, which is posing obstacles right now in the present.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. It's to your point, I think it's almost twofold, right? So the first part is that fear of the other. And so our response to what we don't know and we're afraid of it because we don't know it and it's different is anger, violence, defense. And then what compounds that is that the memory of that is lost over time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this conflict that's built over time because of this initial action via the grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody can remember why. Oh, but our side really hates your side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but our side really hates your side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and you could even go further and say that the truth was rewritten.
Mm-hmm.
You know, history was rewritten to be something else.
Yeah.
That the daughters believe one way for half the film.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting that to get at the truth and unlock the history, the memory... took Elsa to the brink of death, right? Mm-hmm. Like it had to go that far to actually really get at the core of what happened, which was, it wasn't until that happened that they could unlock it and change the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like the fact that they use water in that sense. You know, they keep talking about water as memory, which apparently Google says that there are scientific studies that suggest it has, not to the point that it can make, you know, horses, but, you know, that it remembers the DNA of different substances that are in there.
Did no matter not know how that. Far, yeah, no matter how diluted, so you can keep diluting and diluting and diluting, but there's still like a memory of what was in there. Although not enough for scientists to take it on as like a full-fledged theory, but there is a voice out there that says that.
It works in the film for sure.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting because in this case, water is objective.
Hmm.
The water just says this is what happened.
Story. Yeah.
But you're right. Arendelle has spun their own story out of ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
And they've told themselves, well, this is what happened because we know one person that was there. And this is what we were told as a bedtime story as children. So we know what happened because we heard it from Dad, who I still don't think is dead. I'm sorry. Frozen 3 is going to be Mom and Dad coming back. As soon as the ship showed up in the middle of the field or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is either Pirates of the Caribbean or the... but anyway.
Davy Jones is going to be here, yeah.
Have you ever known a Disney writer to have any compassion for parents of protagonists?
Fair enough.
Man, yeah. It is a tough gig to be the parent of a Disney parent? Protagonist.
Yes, it's
you're
true.
Either dead or you're just not very nice.
Yes, so true. So true. Yep, King Triton, all of them, yeah.
No, King... King Triton
was... I guess, or you're a spur. You're at best, you're like a thorn in their side, like Moana's father, and she feels guilty. We're starting to evolve out of that, but for years and years, it was just like, good God, like Bambi, right? Yeah,
It's true.
Yeah,
I feel like there are. What's the word? Objections to the rule or whatever mm-hmm. saying where that what is not, but it's just so common. It's mm-hmm. just a trope that they even make fun of it in the second Wreck-It Ralph film, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have problems with your parents? We don't even have parents. And the princesses are talking. But right. Anyway,
yeah.
It's interesting to me that that's where you went with the villain. Going back to the villain thing, because I had not thought of it that way. Again, you know what we take into a theater?
Yeah.
I approach the villain, that absolutely is part of it. I approach the villain of the film as change. Because so many of the songs and the character arcs are about the threat of change. The whole opening number, for crying out loud, is some things never change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Anna's skipping down, don't worry, you know. And, you know, she says, I'm holding on tight to you. And in Into the Unknown, she says... I'm afraid of what I'm risking if I follow you, and if I've heard you, talking to the voice, if I've heard you, which I don't, and she emphasizes on it, which I don't, and it's like, she actually says, I've had my adventure, right. I don't need another one, I'm afraid of what will happen, and yet I feel like I have to, and there's this, and we already talked about Olaf's, you know, philosophical university class, it seems like it's about change a lot of it. Now, maybe that's not the villain of the piece, but it's certainly an obstacle. That's the obstacle to the characters. Mm-hmm. The truth is what they discover, but the main obstacle is that fear I felt.
Yeah. But isn't that so true to life?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And so true to life that we all change. We undergo change and growth, whether we like it or not. But also so true that so many people resist and fight the change, and it makes it harder for them to journey through it.
It's funny because I always say, like I always tell people, if somebody tells you they love change, they're either lying to you or lying to themselves. Like change is universally hard.
Yeah.
That just is true. So some folks build better resilience and better techniques and all sorts of better ways to kind of get through it. And so they go through the cycle faster. But the cycle and the need to go through all the stages kind of exists, right? We can shrink the timeline, but we're not eliminating stages or steps from it. Yeah,
you know, and it's funny because, I mean, again, not to dive too personally, but since I already brought it up, going through separation and divorce from my partner and having a child and doing the research to want to cushion and soften that transition, that change as much as possible, I learned a lot about what children need and what they need during that time. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of information around keeping things as consistent as possible. So that's something that's very important to children. Mm-hmm. And it's working on a level that they don't even really know consciously a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But so obviously it's something that they struggle with and they really value being able to keep consistent. Or when change is happening, to kind of do it gradually and keep certain comforts nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that we struggle with at any age, at any time.
Yeah.
And I guess as parents, as grown-ups, you know, it's our job to help kind of walk beside the child as they go through a change and offer support. But ultimately, they're going through it on their own. But if Disney can help offer just a little bit of...
How awesome is that,
right? Yeah, say like, you know, this is going to happen. Get ready for it. As Olaf's nervous, you know, and he's freaked out in the forest by himself.
Yep.
But he gets through it okay. I mean, I say that. He almost didn't get through it. That was kind of a sad...
Like, he got Thanos.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody snapped the Infinity Gauntlet and he disappeared into the snow.
You make such an interesting point there, because children really thrive in households that are stable and predictable. So what kids need is predictability and stability. And so sometimes that is a dual parent household. Sometimes that's a single parent household. Sometimes that's a alternate caregiver household. Whatever that looks like, what they really thrive in is that stability and predictability. And so you're right. When there is a lot of opportunity to kind of teach and support around, yeah, things are going to change and change is hard. That makes us human and normal. That creates that predictability. Mm-hmm. So when this feels tough, that's okay. It's supposed to feel tough. There's not something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be work to get through this, but I don't have to do it alone. Mm-hmm. Here's all of the supports that I have for that, right?
And hearing you say that reminds me of some of the lines that Anna has in Frozen 2, where she really wants to reiterate to her sister, like, you're not alone. We can do this together. Yeah. Because they are all on separate journeys, internal journeys, external journeys, mm-hmm. Crises that they're having. But it's when they come together, you know, that they are able to overcome mm-hmm. or battle and come out the other side.
But you see, that was one of the things I thought was so interesting. And you know, hearing what you ladies are saying, it's funny. You talk about stability and you talk about the difficulties of change. And, I mean, we were talking before, like, I've talked about it here on a podcast before. I've worked at my job for 20 years. I've worked here mm-hmm. at the church doing youth ministry. When things, when the bottom started to fall out and I sank into an extremely deep depression, I got dark. Mm. That was my dark night of the soul. Mm. I went really, really dark. And so it's interesting to me. So you talk about when they come together and Anna says, I'm going to go with you no matter what. Mm-hmm. I'm going to follow you no matter where. I've already done it before. The interesting thing to me about this film is that she almost gets slapped on the wrist for doing it at times. Elsa says, you can't follow me into fire. She says, well, then don't run into fire because I'm going to go there. But how many times does it come up in the film where Anna actually has to do things on her own? Mm-hmm. Elsa has to do things on her own. That's one of the things I when we were talking before, mm-hmm. I think the interesting thing to me is this tension between community and individuality, because I know for me, I needed to take a step back. And I had a community around me that said, we're going to support you, but I needed to take a step back to do some things on my own because I had to work through some things. So, yeah, we need stability. What happens when you lose that stability? Mm. Because no stability lasts forever, or does it? You know, that's one of the things. She says some things never change. Is that true? Yeah. Maybe there is. But in this film, I thought it was really interesting that Anna, especially Elsa too, but I say Anna because I feel like Anna was the one that was holding most tightly to the way things were, even more so than Elsa.
Yeah.
She had to go through an individual journey as well, which they don't highlight in the first film, for either of them, I'd say. It's a communal journey for the two sisters.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what is that? How does that balance?
Well, again, isn't that indicative of real life? Mm. You know, at any point, I may be struggling, and I may have wonderful support, but I'm still struggling.
Yeah.
And there's still going to be a certain aspect of the struggle that I have to endure on my own. Mm. And it's probably healthy, you know, to do it on my own. But it's knowing that it's okay to reach out, or it's not okay to cut yourself off from support. And that's maybe something that, I mean, I don't know how hard Disney writers and producers think about this in their laboratory of, you know, writing ahead of time. But if they are adding to the blueprint of a generation who are going to grow up and go out into the world, then I feel it's very timely that characters be more about inner exploration and inner conflicts going on, because I feel like that's happening a lot in the world. Mm. And so why not also write and send the message that it's okay to go through this, it's scary, change is scary, but you can also have the tools to ask for help and to reach out for support.
I would agree. I think that there is, in any individual or collectivistic view, there's always an element of the other, right? It's a little bit of, I don't know, you want to call it yin and yang, but there is a balance and a dichotomy that has to exist. So it's figuring out that balance between what part is my individual part and what part is actually our collective part. And if I lean too heavily one way or the other, there's pros and cons either way. But the ideal really is finding the right balance between them. It doesn't mean 50-50 necessarily, but it's knowing what that right balance is.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting, you know, talking about Anna in this part. She's, when she sings Some Things Never Change, one of the key things she repeats is, I'm holding on tight to you. Mm. But I felt like in this film, her journey almost encompassed learning how to hold things loosely. Mm. And I think that was part of her arc.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it wasn't just that the seasons change. And, oh, sure, there's some change. Don't worry, some things never change, you know, but this, that, or the other thing. But she does not want the core stuff to grow and mature. And that's a real heart change, even though it's for the better. Even though it's for the better. So there is that balance, too, of holding things loosely as well.
There was such a good lesson in that. So when she sings the song, I think it's called The Next Right Thing, where she's really just talking, like, you know how earlier on we were talking about, like, the black and white when you're novice, and then as you mature, there's, like, there's grit and there's gray in it. But also as you mature, the gray is fun to play in, like, that nuance is interesting and fun to play in. And so that's also a little bit of that, holding things loosely, not having to have all the answers, not seeing the entire picture to take all the steps planned out, but to get to a place where you're comfortable with, all I really need to figure out is my next step.
Hmm. I really liked that part with Anna too, where she sings, what's it called again?
The Next Right Thing.
The Next Right Thing, because she had just lost Olaf and probably was aware that she'd lost Elsa by
the fact that she'd lost
Olaf. So she was really low. And, like, the voice performance was pretty awesome at that point, too. You know, really touching. She was sobbing. Yeah. And then she picks herself up and carries on for the greater good of the people and the village and her quest. So it is an act of selflessness. Mm-hmm. It's not motivated by, I need to do this for me and my whatever, love, you know. It's, I need to do this for something bigger than me, which I like seeing. I like that my son sees, you know, films with those kind of messages.
Absolutely.
Because films have a tendency to be, you know, narcissistic. They are, it's spinning around a character who thinks a lot about themselves.
Yeah.
But in, you know, you look at Moana and Frozen, and we're starting to broaden out. We're including other people in our family. We're including other characters. And now we're even including other peoples, right? And how nice that our worldview is getting bigger and broader. So it's not just me, me, me.
Yeah, it's really powerful.
Yeah, and the understanding of those relationships are getting more fleshed out and complex as well, I think, in healthy ways, in healthy ways. Like, you know, we've talked about the tropes already in this one and the relationship, but most of the relationships here and their understanding of the world gets a lot bigger in this film, a lot bigger. Elsa's basically now standing in the center of the universe. Like, I'm not really entirely sure what her job is, but... But she's got a big role, and but the relationship maintains the same, but it also shifted. So there's a, you know, there is, you know, I will go visit you. You know, I'm going to go visit you. Things are different now, but we still care for each other. The relationship may have shifted.
Yeah. And is not held together by proximity, which I also thought was kind of cool, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We're no less sisters. We don't love each other any less just because we now are at different kind of parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That relationship, that bond, that reality is consistent. Proximity is not what drives it.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking through the wind's a lot cheaper than, you know, the current cell phone plans that TELUS will give you.
From Arendelle to the middle of magic? Yeah, that'd be kind of pricey.
Yeah, like, the long distance fees would be killer, but man.
Yeah. Gale is much more affordable.
Is there anything else you guys want to cover about the film? Anything else?
Yes, Kristoff's song.
Oh my gosh.
That was my favorite one.
I was gonna end off by asking what your favorite song is, but Kristoff's 80s power ballad was the night.
No, okay, so you brought up parodies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is the moment where I looked around and was like, Did we just enter a parody of 80s?
Totally. Ballads. The montage, the power ballad,
and
the hair.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
And Bohemian Rhapsody. Yeah. I saw
it all together.
I totally saw it with the reindeer.
Yep.
But I kind of, maybe I'm just totally snobby because I looked over at my son and he was loving every minute of it. But I was just like, what? This is inconsistent with the rest of the movie. It just
totally
sort of
is.
And that was okay.
But
I
it
guess.
Was fabulous.
I had my lighter out and the police had to, you know, the security had to tell me to turn it off. Right. And, you know, it was a whole big thing. But
all right.
It was completely inconsistent, but I didn't care.
I agree. It doesn't fit anything else in the film, but it was just, they held so true to that, like, 80s power ballad. The wind blowing through his hair. So it looked like he had, like, you know, hair metal band hair, and the montage, and then the nod to Bohemian Rhapsody with the, it was all there.
It was funny. I had a lesson with my kids yesterday because we were listening to it, and Joss kept skipping the song. I'm like, dude, you can't skip the 80s power ballad. He's like, every time Christoph sings, he just wants to hear Elsa. I'm like, no, you have to hear the men sing too.
But can I just take a time out right there? That story told, 5-6 years ago? Okay, maybe a little longer. I don't know. I've only been a parent.
It was 2013.
But okay, the fact that your son wants to skip the male singer song to get to the female, that did not exist when I was growing up. Yeah. No boy would be caught dead listening or singing along to Elsa. Yeah. And now you have... It's just not a question.
Amazing.
And I love that. It makes me so happy
that
my son was just as excited to go see Frozen as anything else. You know, any male hero movie.
Yeah.
And he's a boy too, right? Like, he loves his whatever, all those action.
You didn't feel the need to hand him, like, a G.I. Joe at the end of the film to, like, balance out?
Not for a minute.
Yeah.
He loved every minute of it. And... what was the other thing I wanted to add to that? Oh, that I am so excited to see how this continues to evolve, because Frozen was great, but they were very white. So I can't wait till the next movie where my son is really excited to see a young woman of color or a young woman or man that has a disability.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just keep it coming. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, that's
awesome. Soul, Disney, or Pixar Soul. Did you see the trailer for that that's coming out?
We saw the preview before Frozen.
Yeah. So there you've got an African-American male as a lead protagonist. But one of the things that I've seen is that in the next few years, I think you're right, you're going to see that happen now because representation is happening. Even in Frozen, the world expanding allowed them to expand beyond the white people of Arendelle, which is a little bit pushed beyond. But you had the indigenous people over here. You had the African-American captain of the guard, who apparently is in the first one, but I can't find. Apparently his painting.
Oh, in the first one? Oh, in the painting.
She says, I recognized him from the paintings or something like that. So we searched Frozen 1. No. But apparently people say that there is a picture of him on the walls. In the hall.
Okay.
When I got towards the end of the movie, I was like, wow, this is a movie about colonialization, about genocide, and it's a kids movie, and this is huge, and I'm having feelings about this. I'm proud, I'm confused, I'm skeptical of, you know, Disney telling this story, and do they have the authority to tell this story, but then... It's a start of a dialogue.
Yeah.
It's a start of reconciliation.
Yep.
But yeah, it's definitely a story about relationship to the self, relationship, you know, to loved ones, and relationship we have to our community and the broader community and ancestors who we may have wronged in the past and how we can reconcile that.
We haven't even talked about that. I mean, here's the key metaphor in this is the dam that keeps the water, which has the memory. The water has the memory, and the way to bring healing is to release the water?
Memory.
Are you kidding me?
And and by not doing that, the land is dying. Like, they're right? It's all connected.
Yeah.
And there's still a grace there because they don't destroy Arendelle. They could. I expected, you know, not to all Elsa do anything great or anything of the like, but I expected Arendelle just be gone, and then they were going to start something new. They allow that to build at the end of the. They allow that to remain, and. And they just say they felt that because you let the truth out, that this is your gift.
Yeah,
they continue on. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Holy cow!
I saw that as a metaphor for sort of the old white man who feels threatened by having to cough up the confession of what history has done to marginalized people and to oppressed people, and if. They were to fully, I'm included, I'm white, I come from privilege, in this idea of confessing what we did and how wrong that was, that somehow our freedom will be compromised and threatened. And, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's not.
It's not a pie. It's not a zero-sum game, right? It's exactly. Not, you get a smaller slice of pie if you have to share your pie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It is. It's very interesting because I think that's a bit human nature, right? As we always go straight to, instead of, like I see this in workplaces all the time. So two groups of people are treated differently. And so you'd think the easiest solution is elevate everybody to the top level of treatment.
Mm.
But what we do is we bring everybody down to the most basic level of treatment, right?
Mm.
So if you get something and you don't, instead of just giving you that same thing so everybody gets it, I go, oh, no, 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 that's not fair. Nobody should get it if everybody can't have it. And we take it away. Like, it's just, it's a strange pattern that we fall into so easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, you had brought up individuality versus community. And it's nice also, I think for a long time, Hollywood has that sort of capitalist framework of you work hard, you reap the benefits, and it's all about you, the individual. And now we're starting to move back into that sense of, well, yes, you can be on your journey and you can work hard on your journey and reap benefits of that, but you can do that with community and you can do that together. And I keep sort of coming back to Moana, but I actually think Moana and Frozen 2 were incubated in that same juice of where Disney is going.
I have to admit that I actually love the variety and the breadth of their storytelling in the last few years. There's been some willingness to take more responsibility to own their own memories and their own past. You know, it's interesting with Disney Plus, and I don't want to juke too far here because I just don't want to do that. There's been a lot of conversation about some of the films they've shown, and some of the films they've shown, they're just horrendous for the time. Like, hold up Frozen 2 to Peter Pan. And I grew up loving Peter Pan, but that is one of the most insensitive and horrendous songs in the entire Disney history when they talk about, you know, they
what
sing...
What makes the red man red. Yes.
It's just horrendous. But there were something ideas they floated. They floated about editing the films and releasing them edited. Or they released it in its full release with a statement saying that this film reflects outdated cultural models that do not reflect the values of the Disney Corporation today and that we're basically that they're sorry for. And I thought, to me, now again, white male coming from a place of privilege, to me, that was a good start. Because erasing the film doesn't help. But changing the narrative now and saying we were wrong before does help. Or at least I think it does. Maybe there are probably people that disagree. But I think that that starts the right direction. And I see a film like Frozen as being that sort of conversation. This was the narrative before, and it was wrong. But we have to own it. And say this is what it was.
Yeah. So speaking, I guess, as the only non-white person around the table and not male, so not as much privilege. I think one of my favorite Maya Angelou quotes is, do the best with what you know, and when you know better, do better. And I think that's all we can ask of ourselves. But I do think to that point around like memory and history, knowing our history allows us to move forward from it. And so erasing it doesn't help us, but not acknowledging the impact of it or how we've changed, grown, evolved, believed differently also doesn't do us any service, right? So I think that's really the, in terms of all of the ways they could have handled it, I feel like that's a really beautiful way to kind of we're doing the best with what we know. We know better now than we did then, so we're doing better now, and we're committing to that.
Mm-hmm.
Show yourself. Sorry, I knew it would happen at some
if
point.
If life were a musical, we could break into song now.
Actually, it's funny you said that because Anders leans over to me, and Anders is 9. He leans over to me halfway through the film, and he goes, "You know, if she doesn't want to wake up anybody in the house, maybe she shouldn't sing that song." He said, in musicals, like, it's sort of expressing what they're feeling. He's like, yeah, but seriously, she's just going to wake everybody up.
Like, ever the practical child.
That's my boy, no DNA test required.
I love it.
Oh, man.
That's awesome.
So should I ask favorite song, or did we already cover that as we wrap it up?
Oh, for sure. 80s power ballad, Christoph. 2 thumbs up.
I liked Into the Unknown.
Into the Unknown?
Yeah.
I think that's the most earwormy.
Yeah.
To me, it is probably Show Yourself so that I can look like I'm smart. But I really like the 80s power ballad. It suckered me in so hard and fast. And I was, oh man, I was into that. Ladies, thank you so much for coming on. This has been
thank
so much
you.
Fun.
It has been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. Before I even thank you for coming on, I don't thank you anymore. No. We should screen it or skip it. Frozen 2, screen it or skip it?
Screen it.
Screen it? Just maybe take a nap before you see it, so you've got the energy.
Temper your expectations.
Temper your expectations. I feel good about saying screen it for this one. I thought it was good. It was very good. I'd like to see it again to see whether I really liked it, but I did like it more than I expected I was going to like it, because I just figured there's no way that it's gonna, like, the first one is so iconic now at this point, like, but it juked and went so far another direction that I really did appreciate. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I'd say screen it.
I'll just say P.S. I know I'm breaking the rules because we've
you can
already,
break rules. It's fine.
Because I can't believe I didn't say this for the entire interview. It was visually absolutely stunning.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, we didn't even talk about that.
We
it
didn't
looked
touch on
gorgeous.
That at all. Completely, like, I feel.
Yeah.
Whew! What an amazing thing that cinema can do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It and again, the scope is so broad in this one. There is just so much. And her journey out into the water. I mean, you think about how far it's come even since Moana.
Oh.
And, like, that water was terrifying and gorgeous at the same time.
Oh, and the whole metaphor around the horse that was wild, and she tamed it, and then it became her vehicle.
Mm.
This could easily turn into a podcast series. There was so much to unpack.
There was. When you asked me which one I wanted to do, and I'm so, so busy at the moment in my life, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to go with Frozen because I'm going to see it anyway for my son, and because... what can be so complicated about Frozen 2? And then about halfway through watching it, I was like, okay, there's a lot here.
That's hilarious. I like that your criteria was it won't be complicated.
I don't have a lot of space in my brain at the moment.
There'll be no gray, all right? Yeah. It's fine. Why? Why is Olaf dead? Why did they kill Olaf?
It's so sad.
Anyway, ladies, again, thank you so much for coming on. This has been an absolute pleasure and a great conversation. For you at home, a reminder, you can find us wherever podcasts are found, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Podomatic. If you go to the website, screenfish.net, go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More so that you can have some questions of complexity to get your conversation started where you are. But again, thank you.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.